Wake up, Coastal Carolina. Wake up. This is your CCTA Wake Up Call.
Produced by the Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to the preservation of the U.S. Constitution, free enterprise, and individual liberty.
Merry Christmas, Coastal Carolina, and welcome to CCTA Wake Up Call. I hope everybody is enjoying their holiday with family around and good food to eat. And while you're wrapping up the cooking of that turkey, maybe you can be listening in to CCTA Wake Up Call. We're going to be talking about a number of things today. First of all, we're going to do some local stuff here with Craven County Commissioner's Report and Craven County School Board Report. I want to go around the room, tell you who's here. We've got Kim Fink with us today.
Good morning.
Mary Griswold.
Good morning.
Bob Griswold.
Good morning.
We've got Rainer James.
Merry Christmas.
We've got Glenn Fink.
Merry Christmas.
And we've got Hal James.
Merry Christmas.
And your host, Rick Hopkins. It's good to be with you. And like I said, we hope you are enjoying your holidays. We're glad we're able to spend it with you. Well, last night, CCTA had its annual Christmas party, and we had a special presentation by some of our sixth grade students. Glenn, you want to tell us a little about that?
First of all, it was well attended by both members of CCTA and other members of the public. Everybody was invited. But we did have two student teams that were given an assignment to really help, I guess, dissect a portion of the Constitution, a preamble and an amendment of their choice. And
Among the first 10.
Thank you. From among the first 10. And both students, we had our meal. The public stayed there and was very attentive. And these two, three-team students did quite well at sharing their information and was well received by the folks in participation. So it's good to know that some teachers are willing to focus on something really important to us like the Constitution, and hats off to Randy Seiler for his position on that.
May I say something sexist?
Whoa, what's that?
Well, the team of three boys was good. The team of three girls was better.
Well, also the food there was really great and the camaraderie was wonderful. We just had a good time.
We did, as usual. But as Glenn says, hats off to Randy Seiler, sixth grade teacher at Grover C. Fields Middle School. He works with his students on the founding documents, and it shows.
It shows.
Yeah. Every teacher in our public school system did as good a job as Randy does, our homeschool numbers would go down. We wouldn't need it.
Yeah. Well, Glenn, I understand there was also a school board meeting that you attended.
Yes, and of course, the first half was spent passing out the ribbons, I call it.
Accolades.
And not that some of that isn't good. There's actually public participation in that, and so that was fine. When it was time for the actual business session, which did include public input, it was myself and one other person there, and the other person was actually there by assignment because he was doing some master study and he had to have attended something like that so he could do a report. So I believe I can say that we're the only two that were there during the business session. I guess to make this fairly brief, I did take my opportunity to provide input. Part of that was because Dr. Doyle, I know, had really asked the question of Kim, why is CCTA concerned about the school system so much? And then part of my sharing with them was, you know, the state budget, 56%, I believe the number is, of the general budget, goes to public schools across the state,
right.
$12.33 billion. It's 57% of the general budget. Out of the 316,000 full-time equivalent state employees, half of them are in public education. Of course, 10% of the federal government money, and actually I think it's in that 8 to 12, I forget, does go, as does about a similar amount of money from the county.
Well, the county's, almost a third of the county's budget is spent on education.
Yeah, and dollar amount, it's similar to the federal amount. So, right. So there's a whole lot of reasons, but really even ahead of the money part, it's because we love our country, our state, our county, and we know the future of our state, county, is in the hands of these students.
That's right.
And we want them to have nothing but the best of education.
And furthermore, it's because they are elected to represent us, and they often don't do that.
In fact, that goes to what I wrapped up, and I talked about legislative action, which we covered well during the last radio show, but I did close on my comment about how the board filled the vacant 7th district seat, and it was in direct conflict of the will of 60% of the voters across the county. And this sends a clear message that protecting the status quo is more important than the will of the people. It is interesting that their justification was to make this appointment was on winning the District 7 and discounting the rest of the county, which is absolutely contrary to their resolution that the same board had written last year about emphasizing the importance of the county. So they're willing to move whichever direction they need to keep their folks in place. I will have to say, though, Dr. Doyle did speak and share her 90-day update and then talk a little bit about where she saw things going. I actually incorporated, I appreciated part of what she was sharing. She talked about using processes, about accountability, and I won't go through all of her updates. But the one thing that I thought was very good, she actually recognized that there was competition out there. And that gets incorporated into some of their plans. And their competition.
Refreshing.
Yeah, I mean, historically they had talked about measuring against the other counties.
Mm-hmm.
And like they were the competition. So I really had some encouraged, it was fairly encouraged by, she seemed to understand the playing field. So we'll see how things go, but she seems very structured, seems like she's got a high energy level. We'll see how she does.
Well, Glenn, I want to thank you for being there as the only representative for the public. I don't know why more parents don't get involved and participate. I don't have an answer to that. It seems like they would be more interested in having an active part in the education of their children and who's doing the education, how they're doing it, and how they're representing them.
Yeah.
That's what we see all the time. Just a small handful, sometimes only one or two. Well, Hal, did things go better at the commissioner's meeting? Did you have lots of participation there?
Well, I attended the meeting on Monday the 19th, and that's in the morning, so I didn't say anything, just sat there and listened, and there weren't any other members of the general public there that I can think of. There might have been one or two that I didn't see. I usually sit on the front row so I could look the commissioners in the eyes, and I'm not sure everybody that was sitting behind me, but I didn't know anybody else there. Yeah, there were a lot of interesting things that happened, I thought, for a morning session like that. I thought there'd be a real short meeting. It didn't turn out to be all that short. And one of the things, the first thing they consider is the consent agenda. And, we don't have any really strong feelings of love for the consent agenda in CCTA. We had hoped that they would not use it. In fact, we had talked them into discontinuing it for a while, but when we got a couple of new members during the last election, they put it back in. There were five items. One was the minutes of the last meeting, no problem there. The health department's budget amendment, a Township 7 EMS loan agreement, and that's a loan to just tide them over because their cash flow is kind of bad. Then they had a budget amendment from the family caregiver and another for the senior center. Well, a strange thing happened. Commissioner Liner, George Liner, said when he was asked if the commissioners would approve the consent agenda, he said did not like the paragraph 1B, the health department budget amendment. And so I think the chairman asked, well, would you like to have that removed and considered separately? And he said no. And then when they voted on it, he voted no on the whole consent agenda, but he was the only one that did. So naturally it passed. So it really didn't have any effect, but it was just seemed like a kind of a strange thing for him to do, if I understood it correctly. Yeah. It seemed kind of confusing. Then the next thing that was really interesting. What, honey?
Let me ask something. Mm-hmm. Isn't it true that if one of the commissioners objects to something on the consent agenda that they've agreed to pull it?
Well, he was specifically asked, did you want to pull it? And he says no. So he didn't ask that it be pulled. He just said he didn't like it. And then he voted no on the consent agenda being approved.
So essentially he just went on the record as saying that he didn't approve of that item, but he didn't necessarily want to do anything about the fact that he didn't approve of that item.
Exactly.
So he voted yes before he voted no.
Okay. Glad we cleared that up.
All right. And then I thought the taxes refunds, Mr. Antry explained, taxes credit memos, they call them, if they just let them know that they're forgiven for being billed. And the other one is an actual refund. Well, the refunds came to $5,857.51 this month. And two of them, and well over $4,000, had been done by the Board of Equalization and Review. And they were made to Overlook Holdings, LLC of North Carolina. So the two largest ones, a little over $2,000 apiece and totaled about $4,800, given to this corporation. I don't know a thing about them and why, and that wouldn't really explain it.
Would you say the name again? Overlook?
Yes, Overlook, all one word, Holdings, LLC of Cary, North Carolina. And it was, I checked on that, as registered by David B. Kim, K-E-I-M. But there was no further explanation about it for what it was. I wasn't even sure exactly what business the person's in. But then there were three large credit memos that I found very interesting. And they totaled quite a bit of the credit memos that were given. I'll explain that to you a little bit. There were $46,647.33 in credit memos. One of the largest ones was for Tommy Moore that owned, you know, he was a previous owner of the Moore's Barbecue over on Route 17. And it was the tax assessors had redone this assessment, you know, after the Board of Assessments and Reviews had adjourned. And then Mr. Antry explained very carefully how that can be done if the assessor thinks that it should be reassessed, and even though the assessment board has gone away. Well, what they said was, they thought that Tommy Moore's land was all the land between Route 17 and Trent Road. Well, what it turns out, they were actually owned two different parcels. Maybe he and his wife owned one of them, and he owned the other one or something like that. And so they had to appraise the entire land's parcel as if it were all facing on Route 17. Well, it's not. Only half of it is, roughly half of it is. So the new owner of the restaurant, that Moore's Barbecue now is under new ownership, another fellow named Moore with the last name, which I guess is kind of nice, but his property ends somewhere, and then Tommy Moore's remaining property is over facing Front Road. So that made a huge difference, which kind of surprised me. It was $800,000 in difference in the value of the property because of which road it faced on. Then there were two more parcels that got a lot of credit memos. And they were property that they had assessed. The assessors had assessed it as though it were a commercial apartment development. They're two different ones. And it turns out that they're subsidized apartments for low-income housing people. And there's a state law that's North Carolina General Statute 105-277.16 that says it has to get different kind of treatment. And then Mr. Antry explained that they get theirs based only on the actual rent paid by the occupants rather than on the commercial rental values of properties.
It's not unusual for commercial properties to be appraised in the real world based on income production.
Right, yeah, that's understood. But it was interesting to me that these people already get tax breaks for owning that partnership, that property, but at the same time, they don't have to pay as much property tax either, so that's why they got a refund, really hefty refund. So. I thought that was interesting. I'll tell you this, Afrida Stout, Deputy Department of Social Services Director, gave a really heart-rending talk about the $500,000 she said that her department has lost because of budget cuts, and they're having an epidemic of children who need foster parents because their parents are on heroin. There's apparently an epidemic of that. And she says that she needs more contractual staff. In other words, she's building her staff. And it's needed due to the current caseloads that are already meeting or exceeding state mandates. So she said the average caseload for one person is 15 children.
Wow.
On her staff. And so when it gets up higher than that, they need more staff. And the funding is needed for court-ordered psychological evaluations and drug screenings. And most of it is because these children are children of people who are addicted to heroin. I thought that was a kind of a sad commentary, and sorry that that's necessary. And you know, it's a strange sort of situation. Another things now.
Let me inject something.
Sure.
I'm awfully afraid that that's a result of the welfare state we've built. When parents don't have to earn money to look after themselves and their children, they have plenty of time to lay around and get in trouble.
Yeah. And let me another thing that kind of surprised me, they made the announcement that there was $500,000 more to spend on the industrial park, that they had already got about $180,000, if my memory serves me correctly, to build, extend the road in the industrial park, and now enough to bring the total up to $500,000 to come in through another grant. So they keep throwing grant money.
Here we go, the government and the development business again.
Yeah. And then here's a real kicker. We fought for the federally qualified health centers for a long time because we're afraid they compete with private professional practices. Mm-hmm. And they came in and said real soon they'll be presenting to the board an approval request for a federally qualified health center for Havelock. And they don't have any facility for it, so they'll have to rent a facility. And Commissioner Dacey's, I think to his credit, said, well, they better come in really prepared to explain it because I want to be real sure that they're not competing with private practices. So
I hope he means it.
I hope he does, and I'm sure that was said for our benefit, to tell the truth.
Yeah.
But they know we're against the federally qualified health centers because they do get to be the prime provider of health services for people on Medicaid and Medicare, and therefore... they drive out the private practices.
You know what I suspect happens a lot of times? Mm-hmm. When the government does it, they hop in ahead of the marketplace. They do it before it's quite ripe for that particular undertaking.
Mm-hmm.
So when it is ripe for that particular undertaking, the government's already in the saddle. Private industry or business need not apply.
Right. Absolutely. And one more thing, and I'll quit. I think that all of our listeners that live in Craven County ought to know that there's a grave chance that their cost for getting rid of solid waste will probably increase dramatically. We've been paying $2.25 for a ticket to dispose of a bag of garbage. The recyclables are done free, but I would call it garbage that you have to pay to get rid of. And so the current contractor has asked for an increase that would cause those tickets to have to go up in price to about $3.50. So they've asked the staff to go out for more bids to see if they can do better than that, but they've also asked them to consider some other alternatives. And one of those is to do away altogether with the county providing hauling of trash and everybody take their own trash to the convenience centers. And I heard, County Manager Veach said, well, another alternative might be for them to take it to the landfill. Well, I don't know how that's handled because I've never...
Well, now that's really convenient for working families. Let's see, the landfill's out at Tuscarora.
Yeah.
So that's a good trip out, and you pay by weight out there. They weigh you coming in and weigh you going out, and you pay the difference. The convenience centers... they're spread out throughout the county, and that's not really convenient either. So,
well, what they said that if you just said that you could go to the landfill or the convenience centers, what might happen is what happened is County Manager Veach explained that in Carteret County, where he used to work, that's the system they have, and a lot of private companies have come in there and contracted with people to take their trash on off to the landfill. And then they ask to consider maybe a third thing, which could be considered later, is to tack on to everybody's tax either tax onto their property taxes or a separate tax for solid waste disposal. So you could end up with a bill, say $150 or $100 a year from everybody that owns a house or an improved property with a building on it to get rid of their trash. So that's something that's going to come up in the future that's going to affect all the citizens.
There's something interesting about that.
What's that, honey?
Because the way it is now, it's an expense that's not a tax-deductible expense. If it's a tax, it is tax-deductible for income tax purposes.
Scott Dacey, Commissioner Dacey pointed it out, said that's a way to switch over from something that's not tax-deductible for the citizens to something that is tax-deductible.
However, the way that it's done now, you pay according to how much of the service you use.
That's a choice. Yes. Some people use stickers. Some people, like us, pay quarterly. And our quarterly payment is almost $60. So I would assume if I was paying by the bag, I would pay less.
Well, is that to a hauler, to quarterly?
It is to Republic.
But it's it's our personal relationship. Like the city, I'm pretty certain, does apply a tax. Of course, you're in Trent Woods, but I believe the city of New Bern does actually apply a fee to your taxes.
Well, Bob, I live in New Bern. Yeah.
That's part of our real estate taxes.
I tell you, the one thing that you shared, for them to just get completely out of the business and have it privatized, that's a very interesting direction from my perspective. And then they don't have to worry about bidding it and how much it goes up. Have it privatized.
Absolutely.
Well, it's something I feel like our listeners should know is happening, and maybe they get affected.
And I guess with your sharing, how one thing I will say, stepping back to the school board, if I can retract a little bit, of course, they like consent agendas too. There was like $95,000 worth of computers was on their consent agenda. They actually voted to add a couple things to the consent agenda before they voted on the consent agenda, which they could have just as easily handled as separate business.
Why not?
So they really do like the consent agenda deal there. So opportunity.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that was Hal James giving us a watchdog report for Craven County Commissioners. And, of course, Glenn Fink, chairman of CCTA, reporting on school board activities. And we'd love to give you some more reports on Carteret County, Jones, Pamlico, but we don't have any representatives in those areas yet. We're still hoping that some of you listeners might step up to the plate and contact Hal and take on that responsibility, because, folks, I'll tell you what, if you don't get involved at the local area, you're gonna face some bigger problems down the road, and the whole thing is nobody's there speaking up for you.
We'd like to have some watchdogs in municipalities as well. So
yes,
here's an idea. Why don't we start by inviting people to come and join us and put their foot in the water, find out what we're like, see if they really agree with us, instead of taking a leap of faith and doing something really big from the... Now, not that that wouldn't be wonderful, but
that's a great idea.
We could do it in baby steps.
That's a great idea. The third Tuesday of every month, CCTA has a public meeting downtown New Bern at Stanley Hall Ballroom. It's at 7 p.m. We usually have special guest speakers that come in on different topics. Usually we try to pick what's hot going on out there currently, and have a speaker to address that. And it's a perfect opportunity to meet the chairmen of our committees.
I think the best way for somebody to really get familiar with CCTA and what we stand for and our organization would be to conduct classes on the 5,000-year leap. And Nancy Murdoch, who's our education chairman, has said that she can get 10 people to volunteer to take the classes in a particular area, that we would arrange to do the classes for them until they're able to do it on their own. And that gives them a great introduction to our philosophy and a good way to get started to organize their own group.
All right. Well, this past election nationally, it was grassroots efforts that made the difference.
Absolutely.
Okay.
<Yeah.
laughs> And it was a lot of effort put into it by grassroots organizations like CCTA. And, we've got to do that at the county level, at
the municipalities, the cities, and at the state level, because it's great that we won a victory in the national elections.
For conservative values.
For conservative values.
But we can't afford to go to sleep. We've got to keep an eye on everybody.
Right. Well, let's look at the state level. You know, conservative values all the way through except for the governor's race. And who can explain how that happened?
And attorney general.
And attorney general. So, you know, the forces are at work out there against us. And we've got to be vigilant in...
Absolutely. They never give up.
They never give
up.
Well,
we have to never give up and up them one.
Never give up, as is witnessed by the events going on at the NC State Legislature this week. Well, we need to take a break here to hear from our sponsors, and we'll come back and cover some of that legislative action in Raleigh this week.
Bite Me Firearms, crazy name for an outstanding gun shop. Bite Me Firearms carries a variety of guns. They handle transfers, have one-day on-site concealed carry training, do AR customization, and will put their gun prices against anyone within 50 miles. Bite Me Firearms, Old Cherry Point Road, New Bern. For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com.
Y'all ready for this? The County Compass is a rapidly growing, free weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news, coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Would you like to improve your overall health without the use of prescription drugs? Is stress causing you health concerns? Do you want more energy? We hope that you would like to experience optimum health the rest of your life. We offer a free nutritional consultation to the listeners of this radio program. Call the office of Gladys Sussell, wellness educator and nutritional consultant, at 252-728-2118 to make an appointment to start your journey to optimum health.
Panicelli's Pizzeria in Riverbend features handmade Italian dishes, lasagna, spaghetti, fettuccine alfredo, stromboli, calzone, and many more. Panicelli's uses only the freshest ingredients, and they have fantastic New York-style pizza in four sizes or by the slice. Panicelli's Pizzeria also has great salads and subs. Panicelli's is easy to find. Just head to Riverbend and Panicelli's will be at 40 Shoreline Drive. For authentic Italian food at an affordable price, head to Panicelli's Pizzeria in Riverbend.
Welcome back to CCTA Wake Up Call. We're having a lively discussion about grassroots activities at the local area. At the local level, and we're going to move on to the state level now. This past week has been very interesting, a lot of activity, a lot of special sessions being held in Raleigh, and you know, it's been like a circus. I spent one whole day just listening to the audio stream of what was going on there, and you had your protesters stomping their feet on the floor, beating on the glass, yelling and screaming. You know, what's wrong with people? I don't understand it.
And, but they've gotten their mugshot in the papers.
Well, they've gotten that in there plenty of times. That's their career. You know, what really upsets me is a lot of these people aren't even from North Carolina.
Yeah.
And that's really...
We've been up there when there were protesters who were literally bussed in. They were with SEIU from other states.
Right. And they still continue to do that. So anyway, they went through 3 or 4 days of special sessions there, addressing a number of issues, made a lot of changes. But, you know, what they it seems that they did, they looked at the Constitution, And they looked at where responsibilities were supposed to be and where they used to be. Mm-hmm. And they rolled them back because over the last 100 years, they had been moved and changed to benefit the party that was in power at the time and the governors that were in power at the time. And so the media has played it up that it was a power grab.
And that this has never happened before.
Right.
Which isn't true.
But it has happened before. That's how the power got removed from where it belonged and put in the governor's purview. Yes.
I have a bit of a dissenting opinion on this. I think they were right to bring us back to the Constitution, but I think it would have made more sense politically to do it during the regular session. I don't understand why they called a special session after the election.
Probably
I just think the optics.
McCrory would sign it.
Well, I just think the optics of it didn't look good, and that the optics of it would have looked better had they done it during a normal session. I don't object to what they did. They did what they were supposed to do. But I think the optics of it, because of the timing.
I understand what you're saying, and I don't disagree with that. But, you know, this was far from a normal election.
Oh, Lord,
okay.
Yes.
Nobody can still explain to me about the 90,000 votes
that showed up.
That showed up all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. Now, I know that that's all water under the bridge. It's a done deal now. But
We also can't explain why the federal courts are stepping in to require redistricting, which they had approved. They had approved the districting for the legislators, for the for the representatives, and now all of a sudden they decided they don't approve of what they had previously approved of.
Right.
Because they went judge shopping and they found a judge who would rule the way they wanted them
Bingo.
To.
Bingo.
Finally, right. It's been through the courts.
It was four times. It was approved four times.
And then they finally found a judge that would rule their way. That happens all the time.
Is that what happened on the voter ID? That one amazes me. I can't figure that one out.
Yeah. Well, you know, obviously the will of the people doesn't matter to these
federal judges
at all, you know. And
constitutionality.
The other part of it is usually it's an appointed judge, not even an elected judge.
Mm. But at some
point, in the case of voter ID, it was appointed, was it not?
Right.
Yeah.
But at some point, our General Assembly and the people need to, at that opportunity, say interposition and nullification. Because as a state, when we vote, we the people voted on what we the people wanted. And then you have a superior court circuit of how many judges on that? Four?
Three, I think.
Three or four judges overturned the will of the people on our marriage amendment and on voter ID. Why couldn't our legislators say, federal government, no, this is North Carolina, these are our rules.
Well,
that's what
our people
want.
That seems to be the problem, is that too often they're trying to appease the other side and show that we can work across the aisle. The other side never does. They don't work across the aisle.
I don't think we should be talking about sides. I think we should be talking about principles.
Well, when I say other side, I'm looking at it from a constitutional perspective. You know, my side looks at the Constitution. The Constitution clearly outlines the role of the government. The other side tries to take all the power they can get.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I mean
by
sides.
Power and control.
I'm not talking parties. I'm talking
principles.
Right, principles. So
I think we ought to rename it the Circuit Court Circus.
Yes. I like that.
Well, you know, like you said, the will of the people has been overridden a number of times with the marriage amendment and the voter ID. But that's our fault. And interposition, why don't we have that? Because we don't have enough people demanding from the legislators to do their job.
It has evolved, however. We are closer to it now than we were two or three years ago. It is no longer a dirty word that a legislature immediately turns his or her back on.
Right.
They are open to discussion at this
That's
point.
Right.
We are making progress in
and
a good
direction. And it's
because
of grassroots activities, going and talking and presenting that to them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's so important to get involved at the grassroots level.
which again we talked before, broaden the coverage of that, getting to more of the people that represent different areas of the state, and you can have a huge impact.
Sure. Well,
we often have representatives show up at our meetings. Sometimes we have county commissioners, we have the mayors, local sheriffs. They show up at our meetings depending on what the topics and who the speakers are. And when they see, and we've had meetings in excess of 100 people in attendance, mm-hmm. when they see that many people at the grassroots level and they hear our voices, it makes a difference. We've seen it make a difference.
Yes.
And so, you know, the more people we can get, and our venue will hold up to 300 people. So, folks, there's room for you there. Come on out.
Yeah, we mentioned just a few minutes ago the extra sessions that were held.
Yes.
And there's one that's really interesting to me, and I'd like to know what some of you folks think about it. It's the fourth extra session that passed House Bill 17. And that's the one where they stripped the governor of a lot of his powers to do with education and moved him over to the superintendent of public instruction. And that seems kind of interesting to me because they have to do with the appointments of people like the local administrator, unit advisor, and the superintendent of public instruction hereby appointed two high school students who enrolled in the public schools of North Carolina as advisors to the State Board of Education. So they went through this whole thing and just sort of struck out the governor doing things and the head of the Department of Public Instruction doing them. And of course, we know that's because we're going to have Cooper for the governor, who's a liberal Democrat, and then we've got a Republican, Mark Johnson, who's newly elected to the superintendent of public instruction. So, of course, our legislature being dominated by Republicans, which I think is a good thing. I'm not criticizing that. But I'm wondering, what do you think of the idea of going through and sort of systematically stripping the governor of a lot of their powers to do with education and putting them back over to the Department of Public Instruction? If it had been done under June Atkinson, we wouldn't have liked it one damn bit.
And no, we wouldn't have liked it at all. And I know the reason that they did it is because the governor gets to appoint State Board of Education members. And Governor McCrory appointed most of the current State Board members. So I am assuming that taking away some of his authority is to prevent the State Board of Education from interfering with what the Republican Mark Johnson might have in mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, over and above and beyond that, the legislature also in that special session has given some of the activities and prerogatives of the State Board of Education to the superintendent of the Department of Public Instruction.
Well, that they reference back to Article 9, Section 4 of the North Carolina Constitution, where it establishes that the superintendent of public instruction is the secretary and chief administrative officer of the State Board of Education. And they say that they're just restoring the state superintendent of public instruction's authority because it was stripped away by Roy Cooper and his fellow Democrats to make staffing decisions as the, you know, yeah. in the past.
I don't really have a problem with that.
Yeah. But the timing of it is not coincidental.
No, Mary,
and
you're
that,
right.
That is the problem.
Well here, I'm sorry. Yeah, well, I was just going to say, jury's still out on how conservative Mark Johnson is.
That is true.
Yeah.
Well, my mind is going other places, and it's 60 miles an hour, so I don't, let me see if I can get some thoughts saddled. You said something earlier about the way things look, and we're back to that
yes.
again. I've got a feeling that the way things look, yes, we prefer that they look nice. However, the actuality of what happens is more important. And Kim mentioned principled, that they be done in a principled way. So mm-hmm. in principle, the Department of Public Instruction superintendent is an elected office. The idea originally was that certain things be under
yes.
that control,
purview. Right.
So it we may or may not be putting it in the lap of a conservative person. I hope it winds up that that's what's being done. The timing may or may not look right, but by George, it seems like the right thing has been done.
Yes, that's true. Through no fault of their own.
I think I understand what we're saying better now.
To make it independent of the executive office.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes. Well, you keep referring to timing. And I think the timing is all because of the way the election went.
Yes.
You know, I don't think they anticipated things happening the way they did, but that's the way they happened. And they knew what to expect once January rolls around and the new administration takes office. So it was a last-ditch effort to try to protect their positions.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to say that I think it's accountability as well, because what Rayner said about an elected official, that is important to remember. Mark Johnson is elected. The State Board of Education is appointed.
Yeah.
So if you don't like the direction that they've taken, for instance, with Common Core, you have no recourse.
Right.
You can't vote the State Board of Education out. Right. So I think it's appropriate to look at who is accountable for decisions that are made.
Yeah. Well, I think,
that's,
you know,
true.
I like where they reference back to the Constitution, where the Constitution puts the power, and that's what they're trying to return back to. But what really irritates me is people that haven't give a hoot about the Constitution in all these years are all of a sudden up there constitutional experts, and this is unconstitutional. Everything
actually,
is unconstitutional.
They're apt to yell that when the exact opposite is true.
Right, right. And, you know, if you were to query them on the Constitution, they couldn't tell you anything about it. But they're sure that these acts are unconstitutional.
Because they don't like them.
Right. All right. Well, let's jump into the latest thing that's going on up there in special session, and that's House Bill 2, which has been going on all day today.
Absolutely.
Since we're recording on Wednesday, as you said earlier.
Right. And it was very entertaining, to say the least. And, you know, I really get tired of hearing about how North Carolina has embarrassed itself and damaged its brand. No, North Carolina didn't. Mm-mm. Charlotte did. Charlotte started this because they did something that they were not able to do in the first place, according to our Constitution. Mary, don't you have that?
The state constitution says that local bills must be submitted to the General Assembly for approval on local ordinance changes. Charlotte did not do that. Therefore, the bill that they passed was unconstitutional according to the state constitution, and it was the responsibility of the legislature to come into the picture to change what Charlotte had done because it was unconstitutional.
Absolutely. And that's House Bill 2. That's how we got House Bill 2.
Yes.
Is because of what Charlotte did unconstitutionally.
And what's interesting to note about that is in today's conversations with the General Assembly, it was noted that Charlotte was warned multiple times that what they were getting ready to do was unconstitutional.
Yes.
And if they did it, they would force the General Assembly to take action. So I maintain, as many others do, that this was for no other reason than a political purpose to get a specific agenda for the election.
That goes back to what Mary's been talking about, the timing.
Yes.
Yes.
Questionable.
And Glenn made the remark a little while ago that North Carolina is one of the states that require their cities and towns and municipalities, other jurisdictions, to look at them as subdivisions of the state.
The Dillon Rule, right.
And a lot of people want to make this a LGBT issue. And it wasn't that to begin with. It was a constitutional issue that House Bill 2 came about. But let me read a statement that...
Actually, before you read the statement, I think more of it was a front page advertising issue. By doing this, they were able to raise money nationally.
Yeah.
Just by doing this illegal action of the ruling, they were able to raise money nationally.
Right.
Rather than just locally.
You're talking about Democrat candidates.
I'm just talking about raising, going for money nationally. You hit that emotional hot button. that caused them to raise money nationally.
Well, that also was orchestrated by outside groups.
Yes.
Yeah, that's my opinion. And let me read a statement from Lieutenant Governor.
LBGT alphabet soup ideas behind them. The outside groups,
yes,
were pushing an agenda that had to do
absolutely
with that sort of thing.
And they like to use that word discrimination freely. But let me read a statement by Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest released about this repeal of House Bill 2. Dan Forrest says, Charlotte repealed an ordinance that the General Assembly already voided months ago. Okay? So House Bill 2 took care of the ordinance, so repealing it accomplished nothing, okay? Lieutenant Governor Forrest goes on to say, I support House Bill 2 and do not favor its repeal. No economic, political, or ideological pressure can convince me that what is wrong is right. It will always be wrong for men to have access to women's showers and bathrooms. If House Bill 2 is repealed, there will be nothing on the books to prevent another city or county to take us down this path again. The left has already publicly stated the removal of House Bill 2 is necessary for the rest of their agenda to move forward. With certainty, if House Bill 2 is repealed, we will fight this battle all over again with another city or another county. The names will change, but the national groups who are pushing this agenda will not stop until their social engineering is accomplished. The only thing stopping them are those of us who continue to stand strong.
He nailed it.
I support that 100%.
Absolutely.
Because that's what's happening. There's social engineering and trying to change things in the state of North Carolina and making it a national issue. Mary?
One of the things that has bothered me about this from the beginning, the ordinance that Charlotte passed, the outcome of that ordinance is if you belong to a public gym and you're a woman and you're changing in the shower room, a man claiming to be transgender, whether he is or not, the transgenders are not the problem. It's the people taking advantage of the law, can walk in there while you're taking a shower. Now, you can't convince me that the men and women of North Carolina want the high school football team to have access to the girls' locker room in high school, or that they want their wives or daughters to be in the ladies' room and have a man come in. You can't. Target has already had someone arrested for going into the ladies' dressing room and taking pictures. You can't convince me that the public wants those things to happen.
No. I'm not going to try to convince you.
I'd like for our listeners to understand that we know there are other parts to that House Bill too, like the statewide consistency in laws related to employment and contracting. That's part two. And then there's a part three that's called protection of rights in employment and public accommodations. And we understand those are part of HB 2.
And I'm not
but
sure.
The crux of the problem is the thing that we object to is part one, single sex, multiple occupancy, bathroom, and changing facilities.
Right, and I'm not sure I agree with those other parts being added. That's
I
one
agree.
Of the problems we run into. We have a bill attacking a certain issue, and then all this other stuff gets tacked on to it, muddies the water, and, you know.
Mm-hmm. I would much prefer bills be straightforward and single issue.
Single issue, absolutely.
Well, as has been said in history, no one should watch laws or sausage being made.
I agree with the sausage part.
Well, I'd like to go back to what Rick said about it took all day. We've been listening to this thing develop all day long today.
Oh, Lord.
And it's been off and on. There's been times they were in recess, and I wasn't even sure what recess meant. And one of them was in recess, and the other one
was at ease.
Right.
Now,
they were standing at ease. I got on a phone and called Michael Spicciali's office and talked to Hazel, his wife and administrator, about what's going on up there. I don't know enough about what goes on. She said, we've all been learning all day long. And I said, yeah, I know. And I heard Michael trying his best to support the effort to derail HB2 and just take the session, call the adjourned sessions and go home, saying it was unconstitutional.
Not support the effort to derail it, but right. support the effort to get stop that from happening.
Exactly. And anyway, it was she explained to me that if they were at ease, it meant they were in the room, the assembly room, but they were just waiting for something else to happen. They hadn't adjourned and they were not recessed. They were just waiting.
Well, that made sense because it went back and forth all day long between the activity in the House, activity in the Senate, then activity in the House.
Yeah, and finally, this latest thing this evening, that was the culmination of
that's
that.
That's what I was going to ask. Cooking capsule for us how it finally ended up.
Let Rainer do it.
I'm not going to refer to my notes because they're massive. At an early point in time, there was Michael made a motion that they adjourn sine die. Yes, before any action had been taken on.
Explain sine die.
Well, I had to look it up. I didn't know what it meant either, so I used a 1973 edition of Webster's New Collegiate Dictionary, which says the definition is without any future date being designated. As for resumption in parens, a secondary definition is the word indefinitely, as in the meeting adjourned sine die. So obviously that they were going to adjourn and they weren't going to agree on a time to come back and revisit this subject.
They ruled him out of order on that motion.
No, they didn't rule him out of order.
I thought they did.
What they said was the chair told him we have no adjournment resolution, a written right. resolution. You have to have one before we can adjourn sine die.
Well, to me, that's saying it was out of order because they didn't have the written resolution.
Well, but the interesting thing is later in the day, a written resolution
yes,
showed up.
Exactly.
I don't know whether Michael had anything to do with that or not, but I wouldn't be surprised. It was a House joint resolution. That the special session adjourned sine die.
Right.
That particular thing passed in the House and was sent to the Senate, and that's one of the times when the House remained at ease. They were hanging around waiting to see what the Senate would do with it.
As went back and forth.
Yeah. And then as of 6 p.m., the Senate was still talking about something else, dividing the issue, the...
breaking the bill down to two parts.
Mm-hmm.
The first part, the way it was explained, you had to vote up or down on each part. There wasn't a whole lot of discussion allowed.
And explanations, both parts had to pass in order to pass
right.
it
Right, if
on.
Either one exactly. of them failed, it didn't go through.
One
right.
of them rescinded HB2 altogether, plain language. The other one had this cooling off period of up to 6 months.
It was extended to be all of next year's, the long session, plus 30 days.
Right. And it was also explained that in order to be sent back to the House as one bill, it had to pass both parts.
Right.
If either part failed, it was finished. The idea just
And in
work.
The Senate, it failed.
It failed. It failed. So where does it stand now?
Okay, so finally the Senate got this joint resolution from the House, and they voted to adjourn sine die without having passed anything. So essentially, House Bill 2 remains in force. They, from the chatter about it, they have promised to come back and revisit what they kept referring to as the problem.
Right.
I don't see it as that, but... That's their many of our representatives' views of it. But right now, they have hung tough, and we still have House Bill 2 in place.
Well, there you go, folks. Hope you understand that. Kim?
One of the things that was thrown around a lot today was gamesmanship. The words gamesmanship came out, and there's a lot more going on behind the scenes than just House Bill 2. We are going to have elections again this year, and there's
yep.
a lot of... gamesmanship going on because of agendas and wondering what agenda is going to be. And watching Facebook posts has been interesting because some of the more astute people who watch this closely have said that part of the gamesmanship going on is if the opposing party who wanted the repeal of House Bill 2 did not want the cooling off period, why would they not want the cooling off period if it was all about repealing House Bill 2? They were given their cake, so why didn't they want to eat it? Well, it goes into if House Bill 2 was repealed without any kind of measure to prohibit any other community from doing the same thing, they could turn around and do it. And some of the comments that were made is there's a city in North Carolina that wants to be a sanctuary city, and there's another city in North Carolina that wants to set their own minimum wage. So you can imagine, if we're going to be having an election, taking any of these items as a campaign issue with new legislative districts built up. So this was a way that they were trying to forward their agenda and making one side look like they were winners.
I like your term. It was political gamesmanship.
Well, that wasn't my term. That
and the first city was Durham, and the second city was Asheville.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. The point Mary made was really good. It still goes back to the Constitution of the state.
Yes, and both those things that you mentioned would be unconstitutional.
Have you got a topic you'd like to hear discussed on CCTA Wake Up Call? Well, then contact us at cctaxpayers.com or email Hal at cctaxpayers.com. That's Hal, H-A-L, at cctaxpayers.com. We're a conservative talk radio show, but we value your opinion and would love to have you join us. Again, contact Hal at cctaxpayers.com.
As a strong advocate of Second Amendment rights, CCTA is proud to be involved with S&D Gun and Knife Shows. The next S&D Gun and Knife Show will be at the American Legion Building in Jacksonville on Saturday, December 31st and Sunday, January 1st. Buy, sell, and trade with Eastern North Carolina's best dealers and enjoy the most competitive prices in the state. Most gun enthusiasts and collectors agree. S&D Gun and Knife Shows are the place to be. The next show is December 31st and January 1st at the American Legion Building in Jacksonville.
Y'all ready for this? The County Compass is a rapidly growing, free weekly newspaper throughout Eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news, coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout Eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? They're people like you, a photographer, someone that ran their own business, someone retired from the military. Just people in the community that love this country and have a desire to do their part to lower taxes and shrink government, to protect individual liberty, and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. We welcome you to come out to a meeting. If you like what you see and hear, there's a place where you can contribute to the cause. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. The group meets every third Tuesday at Stanley Hall Ballroom in downtown New Bern to enjoy a fantastic speaker and report on CCTA activity since the last meeting. If you've been disappointed with rising taxes and government intrusion, don't just complain. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Okay, well, folks, this has been delightfully fun, but we're all out of time for today. And folks, I hope you got an education. The NCLEG website has all this archived, so if you have plenty of time to waste, you can sit back and listen to it.
And we wish you a Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Happy New Year.